For those of you who have not yet heard Dr. Shroyan's speak, let me give him a quick introduction. Dr. Shroyan is a close personal friend and an esteemed colleague of mine who is the creator and developer of the Synthesis Repertory, as well as essentially overseeing the homeopathic side of development with regard to Radar homeopathic software. He's also a practicing homeopath and has started a school of homeopathy in Belgium, has been a teacher all over the world, is highly recognized as an excellent instructor and a very gifted homeopathic practitioner. So it's always a wonderful opportunity when we have somebody of this caliber to join us and share their clinical experience, knowledge, and wisdom. I did want to mention that Dr. Shroyan will be coming to the United States in October. He will be in Portland, Oregon at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine October 28th through the 29th. And he will also be in Monterey at the veterinary conference, and that will be October 11th and 12th, and that's in Monterey, California. And he will also be teaching in New York City October 18th and 19th. That's going to be co-sponsored with the School of Homeopathy, New York. And so Dr. Shroyan will be coming to three different locations. Diana, are you on the phone?
I am. And Diana, I'm sorry, those dates aren't correct.
Those dates are not correct.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
The correct dates are he'll be in Monterey on the 4th of November, and on the 11th and 12th he'll be in New York.
Okay, so I'm sorry about that.
That's my mistake.
But okay.
Please, if anyone is interested in getting information about Dr. Shroyan's seminars, please email me at event@wholehealthnow. And I'll send out any information, all the information as we're getting it in. We haven't nailed down the exact venues, but we will in the next week, and then we'll send it out.
And, Diana, that's event singular, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so event@wholehealthnow.com, W-H-O-L-E, health, H-E-A-L-T-H-N-O-W.com. And let me just quickly share with you, I had some friends of mine who went to study with Frederick over in Greece on the island of Alanisos, where George Vitulkis has his school of homeopathy. And the people who I had sent there who came back all gave amazingly glowing reports. One person in particular said it was one of the most important and useful homeopathic seminars that they had ever participated in, and that they felt that their ability to practice successfully had increased dramatically after the 2 or 3 days that they had spent with Dr. Shroyan. So if you do have an opportunity, you're on the East or West Coast or can get to the East or West Coast, I highly recommend that you take the time to sit down and learn with one of our really great masters. So, Frederick, thank you again for joining us. We really appreciate it.
It was a nice speech, Kim.
I practiced all morning.
Okay,
so Frederick, I've got these questions that were sent in to us from people who were on the call from last month. And
yes.
I'll just go ahead and read through the questions. Some of these are a little bit longer, so I'll break them down a little bit. And I'll just give you an opportunity to answer each of the questions, and then if we have time, we'll open it up to the general group.
Yeah.
So the first question reads, what are the guidelines for choosing a rubric? In other words, does it have to match perfectly, or when and where do you take liberties?
Yeah, go read a bit more, Kim.
No, okay, and then the person says, I'm especially curious about combining rubrics and Radar. How far out is it safe to combine rubrics and still maintain the true meaning of the symptom? And then they give you some examples of back pain. There are so many descriptions of back pain, and how many is too many to combine? So I hope everybody understood the question. I want to just read through it again. So the question again reads, what are the guidelines for choosing a rubric? In other words, does it have to match perfectly, or when and where do you take liberties? I'm especially curious about combining rubrics and Radar. And then the question goes on to say, how far out is it safe to combine rubrics and still maintain the true meaning of the symptom, i.e. back pain? There are so many descriptions of back pain, and how many is too many to combine?
Okay. So this question is about information of the patient on one side and information of the symptom, repertory symptom, rubric on the other side. Content of what the patient is saying matching content of what the rubric is meaning. And there is, in fact, one word only which summarizes the ideal relationship between these two. And that word is congruency. Congruent. You may remember from geometrics, it's a shape which is very much similar, looking like another shape. It is a word that is used in a more general context as well, congruent. It means this is in agreement, this is in correspondence. It is very much like, which exactly means it is not identical. So if we look for a rubric which is matching the information of the patient, we don't exactly look for a rubric which is identical. We look for a rubric which is congruent, which is somehow close but has the same shape. And congruency is to be understood in two elements. There are two elements to it. And the first element is the congruent meaning. So the meaning, again, has not to be identical. The meaning has to be quite similar, but in the same direction. So I give you the example of the child who was afraid on the street while walking through the streets with the mother, and when requested, what is it? Why are you so afraid? What do you see? And I see these people, they have the faces of clowns, and I'm afraid. They threaten me, and I don't like to go on the street. And you get a strange story. It's a delusional state. It's an impression. It's a sensation, yes. So we're looking for faces of clowns on the street, which would be identical? No. We will not find it. We will not find it. Because it is not like this, that all the things that the people say, that the patients say, are in our books, in our repertoires of Materia Medicas. No, we have to look for something which is congruent, which is alike, not identical. And so then you reflect, what is this child really observing? What is this child really seeing? It's about what? What is the key element of the information? It's about, you say it, I don't hear you, of course, but it's about faces. Faces, faces of people. It's about people, but even more about faces of people. So you go from there. You say, we're looking for a rubric which is telling me something about faces. This would be your first step, okay? And then not just any type of faces. What is the face doing to this child? He uses the word of clown. So you may look if there is a rubric, faces of clowns. Yes, that's one approach. He expresses fear. So he says, these faces, they give me an impression of fear. I don't like them. I'm afraid. I don't want to go on the streets. They are not normal. So these faces are not normal. They are frightening. A face, normally, it's not frightening. And so then you look like this, and you look for rubrics, and you find in the delusions and the faces, I don't know if you're looking in your repertories, in your computer software, in your books for the moment, but then you see this very nice and interesting book rubric undermined delusions faces, which is ugly faces, sees ugly faces. In the older language version, the rubric is hideous faces, which is the old English word, but ugly is really the meaning of it. And so we have the rubric delusion sees ugly faces, which corresponds to the story of this patient. It is not identical, but it is congruent. So this is the first part. Okay? Congruent in meaning. You understand the example?
Yep.
Now the second part is that the rubric has to be congruent in size. And this is very tricky. Because all what people are saying out there is not in our books, not in the repertory, and even not in the Materia Medica. I repeat this again. The consequence for size is that there are some rubrics which have some information, remedies, that are far too seldom than what you would expect. I will give an example to explain his expectation. So in Kent's repertory, Fear of High Places, anyone using Kent's, has how many remedies? Only four. Four out of 690-something, okay? Less than 1%. Now, if you look in your classroom, in your family, in the supermarket, wherever, all the people being there, you make a rough estimate, and you say, how many of these people, which percentage of these people would have a fear of high places? Well, everybody will agree it will be more than 1%, much more than 1%. So this means, and then you take the totality of the people, not even the ones which have a lot of fears, it just means that the remedies in this rubric, in this Kantian rubric, fear of high places, is much too low. The number is much too low. The consequence was, at the time of we were using Kent's repertory, that every time you have a patient who is saying, I have a fear of high places, and you say, okay, I understand, I know where the rubric is. Easy. You include it in your repertorization, you have again and again argentometricum, pulsatilla, sulfur, again and again, you prescribe it again and again, and what happens again and again as well? No result. Because you have been thinking about argentum nitricum, pulsatilla and sulfur far too often, because the rubric was not congruent in size. So, this is the introduction. Now, practically, what you do, if you have a rubric, and you see the number of remedies, your reflection should be, is it congruent? Can I really use it? Can I rely on it heavily, or shall I just consider it in the sideline? It's two possibilities. And this is depending upon the fact whether the number of remedies in the rubric corresponds more or less to the number of times you would expect that symptom to occur in the people. So in the case of fear high places, there are only very few remedies, percentage-wise. Percentage-wise, of course. But there is percentage-wise many more people you expect to have that symptom, you should be careful using that rubric. And so these are the two approaches, the two reflections you should have, in fact, both aspects of congruency, whether to decide if you have the right rubric for your patient's story or not.
Very good, Frederick. Frederick, in that question, they asked about the back pain description.
I didn't address that yet. So the question says, well, in back pain, there are descriptions, etc. Can we combine them? Okay. Well, what is to rephrase the question in another way, someone has a back pain and must walk bent. Okay. Now you see that in some description of pain, like burning pain or stitching pain or whatever type of pain, again, there is must walk bent with other remedies. Can I combine them just to consider all these remedies, or shall I just stick with my main rubric, back pain, must walk bent? This is the question. Well, for the description of pain, there is a very precise and important reply. That is that in most of the cases, the description of pain is not the ultimate information to decide on the remedy. The description of the pain is the vague information. Often one pain is described in several ways. And so I feel it is very legitimate to combine different remedies coming from the different rubric describing different type of pain, but expressing the same modality, I must walk. But whether it's burning or stitching or lancinating or whatever, I take them all together. Okay? Like if I give you an example to clarify it. If you go in a very precise way and someone tells you, oh, I have sore eyes during my menstrual period. You say, oh, and this happens one time or several times? Every time. For the last 2 years, I have a sore eyes during my menstrual period. You are very happy because you have a very interesting symptom. And you go exactly to that symptom in the repertory, which exists. Eye, pain, sore, menses during, and you find the remedy, zincum. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you look to the other information of the station, etc. You may be interested by zincum, but some other information comes up, doesn't fit zincum, so you would like to find other possibilities, but still, also, consider this eye symptom, which was so very interesting and clear, because existing there since 2 years.
Mm.
Now, at that time, it is very legitimate to consider the other remedies which have eye symptoms during menses. And whether this pain is sore or burning or in general or lack of scent, etc., or pressing, they all have the eye pain during menses. And the modality is much more striking, much more important than the description of pain. So at this time, you can combine those remedies, and they are 11. At that time, there are 11 remedies expressing pain in the eyes during menstrual periods. Now, the interesting point is that this change of, this moving of remedies from the description of pain to the modality, we have done that in synthesis 9.1. So if anyone is having synthesis 9.1, and you look for the rubric eye pain, menses during, you will see that the descriptions of pain are following the modality, and that all the remedies of any modality, even if appearing only once, they are present in the main rubric. So, yes, for the descriptions of pain, for sure you can consider the other remedies and expand your rubric. This is very interesting.
Very interesting. And you know, Frederick, I think this is a very relevant discussion because now there's such a movement in the homeopathic community to mostly, or even sometimes exclusively, focus on the sensation over the location, concomitant, and modalities, that I think it's important that you address the lack of reliability relative to sensations because of the way people describe them based on their culture or upbringing or all these other things. So this is a very important discussion, I think.
Yes.
Second question, Frederick, that was asked has to do with the rubric forsaken.
Yes,
and the question reads as such. It says, forsaken is such an ambiguous word. What comes under the description of forsaken, and when can we go deeper? What are some other rubrics that are like forsaken but are more specific and go deeper?
Forsaken is a general word. Yes, it is a word with a wide meaning. And it is a word which may be understood by different people in different ways. It is a big rubric, it's many remedies. It may be understood in a social way, like being forsaken as compared to other people. It may mean forsaken as a distance, like a feeling distance from beloved ones instead of closeness. It may even mean forsaken like some kind of animosity, enemy-like feeling, distance, opposite feeling. There are many meanings to it. So the rubric forsaken, just as much as the word forsaken or any story telling forsaken, means this very wide field of meaning. Hmm? Now, when can we go deeper? When can we use another rubric and which ones? Well, this is when the patient is expressing the forsaken feeling in a more precise way. So forsaken, it's the separateness, it's being alone. It can be just, I physically feel alone. If a patient comes to you and says, I feel alone, I feel abandoned, I don't feel connected to the other people, and a story like this, you hear just forsaken. But then maybe they say, I feel so alone that it's as if I am all alone in the world. Or I feel so alone as if I am in a graveyard. The loneliness, the life and death kind of loneliness as of a graveyard. So then the forsakenness suddenly gets a kind of tinge, a kind of color, and the patient has told you the symptom more precise, which at that moment you can use, and which is yielding then a smaller amount of remedies. Another example, someone says, I feel forsaken, yes, nobody loves me. Then we tend to hear this kind of expression quite often. But then someone says, I feel alone, I feel forsaken, nobody loves me, and there's no, my friends don't love me, and my wife doesn't love me anymore, and yeah, my parents, they come by, but I don't feel they love me. This is more particular, yeah? Just not everybody, but the people who are loving you, should be loving you, even they, you don't feel that they love you anymore. And so you have a sub-rubric, forsaken feeling, feeling of not being beloved by parents, wife and friends, etc. So we can use the rubric in general if there is no specification. But if there is a clear specification, like a type of forsakenness in either direction, then we can use the more precise rubric. And you can look at the cross-references in the repertory. There's a lot of cross-references there to get some inspiration which type of forsaken feeling should be fitting more precisely to your patient.
Very interesting, Frederick. Did you want to say more about that, or
No, I think it's okay.
Okay, good. All right, so the third question reads as such. When do you use ailments from grief? Is it only used when there is a death, or what other kinds of things are covered under this rubric?
Yes. Ailments from grief means two things. One, it means ailments from. So ailments from, it means that something drastic has changed in your physical or mental health since a certain event. So since my mother died, I am not digesting anymore. Or I have a diarrhea since 3 years, since my mother died. Or I am in a state of depression for 5 years since my mother died. Ailments from means something happened and keeps on happening since a certain moment. So we don't use ailments from grief when there has been a death in the family or friends or wherever. There has to be a consequence. A consequence out of the normal. It has to be a symptom. So if someone loses the husband and grieves therefore 1 week, 1 month, 6 months, we don't consider that a symptom, okay? It's only when it takes 1 year, 2 years and even more and then still not functioning, still depressive, etc., still not digesting, still not sleeping, etc., then it becomes a symptom. So, the other part of the question, ailments from grief when death, okay? Yes, death is a type of grief, but only one type of grief. Grief can be because of many things. It can be even because of losing financial position or social position. It can be many things. Grief is after a certain event, and that event can be very, very variable. In all these occasions, if the occurrence of the event has led to a disbalance which has been continuing out of the normal, we can use the rubric ailments from grief.
Very good, Frederick. Next question, which I think is an interesting question, has to do with control issues. And the question reads, many cases have control issues. How do you repertorize serious control issues as an important theme in the case? And then it goes on to ask, is it even possible to do that, or should they be treated as more of a miasmatic theme?
Okay, two questions. First, about control. So the patient is controlling. For example, the telephone number he has to dial for this teleconference again and again and again. Okay, this is a precise rubric in the repertory, not controlling, but checking. Mind checking, must check twice or more. Must check the telephone number, must check whether the door is locked, etc., whether the fire is shut down, etc., etc., check. Now, this is a very precise symptom. There is a more general rubric because this checking is a part of a type of behavior most often where they are compelled to return and check whether the door has been locked. Step into the car, get out of the car again, check, oh, it's locked, okay. They start, turn the motor on, want to start driving and saying, still I would like to check one more time. Compelled, they're compelled to do it. And so the rubric there, more general, is mind starts compelling. Now, can you use that rubric? Yes, of course. Because if the information of the patient is that he is compelled to check again and again certain aspects, certain moments in his life, it is a symptom, and we have a rubric which has the corresponding information. So why not use starts compelling or checking twice? I want to draw your attention just as a little second thought that this comes close to another type of behavior where people feel compelled to do certain things, and that this, when it becomes a ritual, like in children, when they go to sleep, they have to give a kiss to the mummy first and then to the daddy, and then the mummy has to take them up, and when the mummy has put them in the bed, then the daddy has to come to close the curtains, and not mommy can close the curtains, and this kind of ritualistic things happens more often than you think. Ritualistic sounds a bit heavy, but it's all this kind of compelling behaviors as well, where a certain sequence has to be followed in anticipation of whatever, going to sleep or going out on the street or before eating, often you see before eating. So this is another type of control issue which may be interesting to remember that we have a rubric for that.
Great. Freddie, what about the part of the question that has to do with miasms?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I forgot that. So the question is, can we use the rubric as such or has it to be miasmatically approached? Now, frankly speaking, I wouldn't know what it would mean to approach that miasmatically. I tend to work in a very straightforward way, and which is, if the patient tells me that he has a ritualistic behavior, then I will check out the remedies which are in the rubric ritualistic behavior, and then cross them with other information the patient is giving me, and this will lead me to the remedy. I wouldn't know how this would be translated into a miasmatic theme. And in practice, this is not what I'm doing, so I cannot give a further reply there.
Okay, fair enough. Frederick, another question that was asked, actually two people asked a similar question. One person was asking about how to repertorize hot and cold. Do you use better from heat or better from cold, or cold ameliorates, heat aggravates? And then another person asked basically the same question, but they actually specified the rubrics in the chill section. So I'm going to actually read that second question since it's a little bit more specific, but essentially asking for the same information. It says, I'm not clear about the coldness rubrics in the chill section. The section starts out with coldness in general, which I think means the person feels cold internally, and also externally to touch.
Yeah, but Tim, I'm going to interrupt you because I'm going to reply to each piece.
Okay, so let's reply to each one. Fine, good enough. Okay. So the first one is coldness in general, which she thinks means feels cold internally and also externally to the touch. Let me read through them, and then we'll go through them one at a time. How about that, so people can have a context for the whole thing?
Well, yeah, as you wish.
Let me just read through it, and then so she says that, and then she says, but then there is chilliness, which I think means the person feels cold internally but is not cold to the touch. So then there's also chill external, feels cold to the touch, but no internal sensation of coldness. And then there's also chill internal, so there's chill external, chill internal, which she believes feels cold internally, but body not cold to the touch. And then there's also, in generalities, heat, lack of vital heat. And so obviously all these different rubrics that seem to be related to a similar situation are creating a little bit of confusion for this particular individual. So I'll go back in. The first rubric she mentions is coldness in general in the chill section.
Yes, Yes, okay. So coldness and chill are the two words. Chill, chilly, chilliness, cold, coldness, cold feeling. And these are the two areas. Eh? And so the first thing that I would like to clarify is that there are, in fact, two different sets of symptoms, two appearances related to cold. The one is, let's call it coldness. And that's a state, like a body temperature. I feel the cold. I'm feeling cold. Okay? I am a cold-blooded person. So it's a state which takes some time, which is there for some time. Hmm? And what is the difference with chill, chilliness, etc.? That, again, is a feeling of coldness, but which makes one shiver. So there is some kind of reaction, some kind of discomfort in addition, shivering, muscle shivering, shivering from the colds. So these are two things we should set apart as a start. Now the chapter in general is called Chill. And the first rubric is called Coldness in General. This seems rather odd, isn't it? Now, if you look at other rubrics, at other chapters in the repertory, like Vertigo or Cough, you do have other places like these I just mentioned, who start off with a general rubric. In Vertigo, it's clear. You have Vertigo and then Vertigo in general, which means these are the remedies that are relevant for Vertigo and in any way, any place, any time, any modality, whatever. Vertigo remedies. Okay? The same for cough. These are cough remedies. And in fact, in the chapter Chill, it should mean the same. So the first rubric is just remedies which have some affinity of chill. Okay? They have chills. And the better way of this rubric would therefore be to call it chilliness in general. And now if you look in your synthesis to the chapter Chill, what do you see? Quickly after I received this question, I changed this first rubric into chill and chill in general. Because this should be the real rubric. So the first rubric of the chapter, like generalized rubrics in any other chapter, means all the remedies which have a lot of chills. Like vertigo in general, all the remedies which have a lot of vertigo. Has this been understood?
Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
Now, so you can read the second part of the question then.
Okay. So then he says, she goes on to say, but then there is chilliness, which I think means the person feels cold internally, but is not cold to the touch. And then there's those two rubrics, chill external and chill internal. And she wants to understand the distinction between those two different rubrics.
Yes. Okay, so the chapter is called Chill. And the sub-rubric is Chilliness, which suggests there is a difference between chill and chilliness. This is a very good question, and I think, if you reflect about it, quite perplexing. Because who is going to explain to me the difference between chill, feeling a chill, and feeling chilliness? Maybe some exotic extraterrestrial language expert, but not the common people who are supposed to speak the language of the repertory and the Materia Medica. So this rubric, chilliness, according to me, is a mistake. And if you see at the sub-rubrics, you look at the sub-rubrics of chill, chilliness, you see morning, evening, modalities, whatever, and all of these, virtually all of these, they exist also on the level 2, okay? So you have chill, chilliness in the morning, but you also have the symptom chill in the morning. And I believe we should at some stage just move these remedies together in one rubric, because I cannot explain or imagine any difference between chill in the morning and chill, chilliness in the morning. Okay? Now, the difference between chill external and internal is not exactly as suggested in the question. It is a little bit different. The words external and internal, like in other places of the repertory where this distinction has been made, they refer to the subjective feeling. So the person is experiencing the chill externally. So rather on the surface of the body, on the skin. And you can see that in the sub-rubrics again, there is this one rubric with the sensation as if the hair were standing on the end. Now my hair at least is on, at my skin. Okay? So it's an external chill. And then internal chill, it means again, subjectively, I experience this chill inside my body. Inside. Eh? Look at the sub-rubrics. You have a coldness as if in the bones or in the blood. It's inside, really inside, deep inside is the coldness. So the external and internal chilliness is inside or outside of my subjective body experience. Okay, the next part.
The final part, Frederick, is the fact that there's also a rubric in generalities, which is heat, lack of vital heat.
Yeah, that is the one rubric you should look at to when someone is saying that they are lacking heat all the time, a chilly person, they have to turn the heating on, they have to take a sweater extra, they have to go and live in Southern California instead of rainy, cold Belgium. This is the rubric you should look at for those people. This is the state, as I was saying, the state. Eh? So you have for the cold people, you have heat, lack of vital heat. And for the warm-blooded people, you have heat, sensation of heat. This is the state rubrics.
The rubric in generalities, heat, lack of vital heat, is a fairly large rubric, Frederick, and also
yeah.
A lot of the remedies that we commonly think of as being warm-blooded, like lachesis, metarhinum, pulsatilla, sulfur, they're argentum nitricum, they're all listed in that rubric. So
yes.
Do you use this rubric actually when you repertorize?
I don't use it a lot.
You don't?
I don't use it a lot, but it is true that some remedies, they can be a cold-blooded or warm-blooded.
Right.
Now let me just, there is one little part of this other question on heat and cold that I would like to cover, eh? Question 6, Kim, for your geographic reference.
How do you repress hot and cold? Is it better from heat or worse from cold? Or is it cold ameliorates and heat?
Yeah, there is one important issue, which I will first say in the enigmatic sentence, that the aggravation and amelioration of opposites are not always equal. Eh? Sounds like Einstein, eh? No, anyway. So, the aggravation from warm, warm and cold are opposite, does not equal the amelioration from cold. No. You understand this?
Yeah, it's a very...
Aggravate is not equal to cold ameliorates. And this is important. Not always. It can be. It can be. Of course, it can be. But not always. If someone has a certain complaint, like a headache, they go outside in the cold air and they say, oh, wow, yeah, no, my headache is improving. And then they go back inside and, the nice influence of cold air is gone again and the headache is there again. But it doesn't mean that it is just so much worse in a warm room. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. And the same can be, but doesn't have to be, exists for desire and amelioration. So desire and amelioration of the same are not always equal, of the same modality are not always equal, to say it in Einsteinian language. So we desire, in my headache again, and I desire to be in the open air, I say yes. When I have a headache, I go and take a walk outside. And you say, oh, head pain, open air, amel. No. Wait. Maybe this person is just desiring to be in the open air because she likes to walk outside, fresh air, etc. And yes, somehow she may feel better, but basically the pain of the head, the pain in the head is still there. It isn't improved so much after all. Okay? Well, someone else says, no. It's fresh air improves my headache straight away, and so if I have these long meetings and I cannot go home and I have to be there, then I tell everybody, listen, I have to open the window, you have to bear the sound of the noise of the street outside, because I know that the fresh air coming in through the window is improving my headache. So the patients, if you listen carefully, they will tell you whether it is a desire or an amelioration, whether it is an aggravation from heat or an amelioration from cold. And, well, you just go by what the patient is saying then.
Very good, Frederick. I think that's an important point. Frederick, another question that one of the participants from the last call sent in has to do with the fact that we've got a lot of rubrics in the repertory that only have one remedy listed. And I can think right away of, for example, mind hatred unmoved by apologies, which has nitric acid, its only remedy in the rubric, and it's in bold type, or queerest objections against whatever was proposed, and again, only one remedy, argentum nitricum, in bold type. So the question is, can we use these rubrics with one remedy? Can we use all of them, and under what circumstances are they useful to us?
Well, the reply is in fact the same as the other one. It's congruency. So it may be a keynote. It looks like a keynote, but be careful. Is there only one person out of 100 that I know who will have the symptom, unmoved by apologies? Or is it maybe a bit more common? So then I must be more careful because it's not congruent in size. There are maybe more remedies that will appear someday in these rubrics. And so the one remedy rubrics are interesting to look at, but you should be careful to use them and to let them decide on the remedies of your repertorization. Now, just very practically speaking, in software, most of the people will have some software, you can add these rubrics to the repertorization anyway and attribute them the weight zero, which means that they are not counted to position them in the repertorization, but that you will be reminded of their existence in the repertorization because of the other symptoms. Is this clear what I'm saying?
Yeah, very, very clear. Yeah, that's a good answer. Frederick, another question that was sent to us reads, last time you spoke about concomitants, could you please explain how to find these in the repertory?
Yes. So you know concomitants was an idea of Bernhausen, who emphasized it a lot, and it looks as if Kent didn't emphasize it at all, but there's a lot of them, and they're scattered all through the repertory, and mostly just with the word with, W-I-T-H. And so they're not so easy to find. For example, you have head pain, forehead, with sleepiness. Whenever the headache comes, the concomitant is that I start feeling sleepy. This is a clear concomitant, you agree? Now, with a little bit of searching, you can find those rubrics. Now, because we feel that they deserve some more attention, some more, that they should be standing out there more strikingly, since Synthesis 8, I believe, we have started collecting those symptoms at the same place, more or less. Because concomitants and symptoms happen at the same time, it is like homeopathically very interesting, like alternating, where symptoms don't happen at the same time, but just one after the other, coming back, going, coming, alternating. Alternating is also a very interesting time modality, which is very helpful. And so, much like patati alternating with patata, we have created accompanied by. So for headache, I invite you to check your software, your books. You will find head pain accompanied by. Just as the first modality, after sites and times, first modality almost, you will see accompanied by with a whole set of sub-rubrics, sleepiness, but complaints on all different parts of the body, all types of mental or general complaints, which are concomitant to the headache. So that process is a long process to convert the repertory to, how shall I say, to put the concomitant information as sub-rubrics of accompanied by. So it's not final. You will still find a lot of rubrics scattered through the repertory just recognizable with the word with, But more and more, and especially in synthesis 9.0 and 9.1, you will find a lot of rubrics under the headings accompanied by.
Very good. Frederick, another question that was sent to us reads, please discuss anxiety and panic disorder and how to repertorize these type of symptoms.
Yes, that's a very interesting question. First, I would like to remind you that anxiety disorder is a clear disease state, a disease definition, which we can define like something, it's a kind of fear or nervousness, which is inappropriately severe for the circumstances. This means it occurs at an appropriate time or with an inappropriate frequency or intensity or too long lasting, and anyway to such an extent that it interferes with the person's life circumstances. It means it is a symptom of disorder. Now, like for any disorder, I know there are those rubrics, including in synthesis and maybe even more in some other repertories, which are focusing on the disease states. But you should know that the core of homeopathy is to care more for the real symptoms coinciding with this disease state than for the disease state itself. That is to say that if you know the disease state, anxiety disorder, or stomach ulcer, or hemorrhoids, whatever, you really don't know the remedy yet. Then your work still has to begin. Because then you have to find, remember the first teleconference we had, you have to think of sites and times and modalities and extensions and all the different types of modalities, the 9 different types. And it's because of the content, the replies to these questions, that you will be able to define a certain remedies and certain preferences. So the anxiety disorder is fine. It's fine to know there is an anxiety disorder, yes, but what is more interesting, when is the anxiety disorder? Is it when stepping over a flake of rain, water on the streets? Or is it when entering the toilet and someone is knocking on the door unexpectedly? It's the content of the anxiety disorder will lead. It's not the name of the disease.
Frederick, I know we do have a rubric in synthesis, mind, fear, sudden, equals panic attacks. Do you use this rubric at all for panic disorders?
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
It may give me some idea, but if I have a content indication, what it's all about, and the anxiety attacks, they happen all the time in the evening when the light is going down, when the twilight is coming up, when the shades are growing, how you say that in English, twilight.
Twilight, yeah.
When I have this is what is interesting me.
Mm. What's characteristic is what you're looking for.
Yes.
Well, very good. Here's a kind of a more specific question, Frederick. It reads, how do you repertorize a dog, with recurring ear infections?
Of a dog, yeah.
A dog, yeah, like a, woof, woof dog. Yeah,
yeah, good.
With recurring ear infections from getting a bath, and the ear smells very bad when it's infected. Also, we're told that the infection is a yeast infection, which she has on her skin at times as well. How do you find those kind of yeast infections?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll start with the end. Yeast infections, exactly the same reply as anxiety disorder. It may be a rubric somewhere or people saying, for yeast infection, use these 5 remedies, either of these 5 remedies. I'm not so much interested in that. I'm interested about the result of the yeast infection. I'm interested in how the yeast infection expresses itself in that precise patient or dog. Okay, so I'm not going to repeat myself on that argument.
Sure.
But this is about the yeast infection, what I need to say. Eh? Mm. Now, we have some information here in this little story, which we can use as an exercise, of course. It's not a real case, because I don't see the dog barking here in my room. But we have some information, and I will just move along in the reasoning that I would apply. So I take each piece, and the first piece is reoccurring ear infections from getting a bath. Okay. So what is the focus? I'm thinking loud now. What is the focus of this story? It's all about ear infection. And what we know more about the ear infection? Well, in fact, from this sentence, two things. First of all, it is reoccurring. So it comes again and again and again. So it indicates a weakness in the immune system. The fact that it's reoccurring is an information, extra information. Yes. Then we go and look for a rubric. Is there a rubric where this repeated ear infection is reflected? Now, you may look under the rubrics of ear, and you may also look in the rubrics of generals, because all repeated disease phenomena are under generals' history, personal history. It is a history of ear infections. And you will see there is a rubric, history, ear inflammation, internal recurrence, with a number of remedies. Okay? So you can take that symptom, generals, history, ear inflammation, etc. So this covers the fact that it is reoccurring, points to certain remedies. Now there is a nice modality after getting a bath. Oh, when it gets wet. But the bath. Okay, getting a bath, dog gets a bath. So it's not the ears getting wet, it's the dog getting wet. So it may be that it's not to do locally with something happening at the ear, but maybe cooling down, becoming cold after the bath, becoming wet after the bath. So I must distinguish the local effect of water on the ear. It's not that, it's about getting wet. And so this little reasoning leads me to a more general symptom. I could look first of all in the chapter ear, whether there is some remedies there where ear problems, ear pain is appearing when bathing. Okay, that's fine, but this rubric doesn't exist. So then I switch to generals, and there is a rubric, generals bathing aggravates. And this I can take because it expresses this modality. Now then I read on and I see smells very bad. Okay, that's interesting information as well, because it's not always the case. Ear infections smell badly. And so I look for a rubric which expresses this in ear. Now you may know that discharges is the level where you need to look for odors, because these odors, like in ear and nose, they are mostly related to the discharge. It is the discharge that is offensive, and you find the rubric ear discharge offensive. Then the other part is that it appears on the skin at times as well. At times as well. So this means there is no precise time. On the skin means there is no precise localization. And there is also no indication about the shape or whatever. In fact, this is this last piece is vague information. So I would even not yet consider it. And see where we are with the three first symptoms we have. And I have done my little exercise, as you may have done at the same time that I was speaking, and I found there is four remedies showing these three symptoms, which is mercury, colic, psorhinum, and silicea. And then you have to go on. You have to...
What was it? Mercury was the second one, Frederick?
Mercury, calc, calcarea.
Oh, calcarea, okay.
Yes, psorhinum silica. So you may ask some more questions to your nice dog. You may observe him, etc. You may say, oh, these remedies, they share chilliness, the cold.
Now, all dogs remedies. Rule, Frederick, so we could rule that out from Mercurius, right?
Oh, if the dog would be cold, yeah.
No, I said all dogs drool.
Drool, yes. Okay. Well, anyway, you will have to move, eh? And if they're only chilly, calcarea, psorhinum, and silicea, they would come in. Eh? If they're sensitive to cold, but also to the heat, then you would rather think of mercury, who are the temperature-sensitive dogs. And like this, you look for a differentiation.
Very good. I mean, that's exactly the correct procedure. Thank you for doing that, Frederick. Another quick question, Frederick. This is not a mind question, but rather a mind-boggling question. In the stool section, under the rubric black, brown, and dark, there are sub-rubrics, fecal. It seems redundant, stool and fecal. However, some remedies are in the subrubric, but not in the rubric itself. For example, the subrubric dark fecal has kina in it, or china, but kina is not in the dark rubric. That suggests that there is significance of the symptom fecal in stool. So my question is, what is the difference between stool dark and stool dark fecal?
Well, this is really an exciting question, because I must tell you, until some 2 or 3 years ago, I would have been unable to reply to that question, and I was puzzled myself with that, the existing of those rubrics this person mentions. But fortunately, we have been looking with our whole team, we've been asking all around, you know, what is the meaning of fecal, looking in the old dictionaries and trying all over the place, and it just looks like stool, and what does it mean, fecal stool or not fecal, I don't know. Anyway, we found the reply, and it's, in fact, it's mind-boggling, the reply. It's very simple once you know it. A fecal stool is a stool containing fecal matter, as opposed to stool which does not contain fecal matter, and which is consisting mostly of blood or water or mucus. This is the reply. And now, you will see again, in synthesis 9, there is a rubric stool fecal, and next to that symptom, there is a little symptom note. The people who have the book, they can also look on the CD, stool fecal, and find the same symptom note, and you will find the same explanation and also some symptoms from some old authors. When you read them carefully, you understand that this is really the meaning of fecal stool. It is just stool containing fecal matter.
Very interesting. I was curious to hear what your answer was, because I didn't know the answer to that question.
Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. Eh?
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you for the person who sent that question. It's I was intrigued to hear what your answer was as well. Well, I can see that we're unfortunately out of time, and I still haven't been able to go through all of the questions that were sent to us.
Yeah.
So, Frederick, would you be receptive to having some more questions sent and finishing these questions and doing another teleconference session in the future?
Yeah, because, in fact, I prepared my whole speech and I couldn't deliver one word of it.
Okay, so then we will set up another time, everybody, to interview Frederick again. And, again, you can send questions to the same location you did last time, and we'll try to ask those questions of Frederick. I do want to remind everybody that Dr. Shoryans will be coming to the United States in October and beginning of November. He will be teaching in New York City and also in Portland, Oregon, and also in Monterey, California. If you want any more information about any of those events, please send an email to event, E-V-E-N-T, at wholehealthnow.com, which is W-H-O-L-E, health, H-E-A-L-T-H, N-O-W.com. And again, Dr. Shoryans, I don't think you can even really get a sense of how useful this information will be to you after having gone through the repertory for 2 days with him and really understand how to make the greatest use of this amazing tool. So I strongly suggest, if you have the opportunity or time to participate in any events, that you do take that opportunity.
Jim,
I've got to unmute the lines. And
Jim, can I say one more thing?
Yes, please, Frederick.
Everybody as well to come to India in February 2007.
Oh, yes. We will send them information. Let me just mention really quickly, Dr. Shoryans and Dr. Farooq Master will be providing a clinical training in India where they actually see live patients, difficult cases, and you actually get to observe and watch real homeopathy happening with very difficult cases of physical pathology. So this is a really golden opportunity to really fine-tune your clinical skills in homeopathy. And we will be sending out information and also posting information on our website about that event in India. So I'm going to unmute the lines, and if we can give Dr. Shoryans a very warm North American thank you, I think that would be great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.